one and all once again to Dual Wielding episode 52. If this is the other podcast, it would make some lame comic book joke, but since nobody really gets it...
What's a comic book? I don't read those things. Those things are made by the devil.
Made by
they incite violence. Burn the comic books.
I'm sure that people think the same thing about video games, but we know that. We also know that apparently some people think video games leads to the murder of animals, but we'll get to that later on. Joining me this week, we have Daniel.
As usual.
Hello. And special guest, Adam Scher, who from last time he's been on works at like 50 different sites now.
Yep, the main things, I'm the senior associate editor of Digital Gaming Underground, which also makes me the host of the PlayStation podcast, or technically interim host, for now at least. And yeah. I'm also the managing editor at TriptronicTech.com, an awesome new tech site that's hit the web in the last few months.
Almost as if we're not worthy anymore.
I would just say this, as an interim host for two podcasts for a year and a half, that title sticks around for a while.
Yeah, I've come to figure that out.
There's no such thing as an interim host.
You take over it, and then nobody else wants to step up to the plate, so you're just kind of stuck doing it because you don't want to stop doing it.
Yeah,
I've been an interim guest on this show since like episode 4,
and that was not long after that.
Yeah, and somehow that's morphed to me being a host as well. But yeah, I mean, it was a huge week for gaming. It was that week, the one we've all been talking about, where 50,000 games came out. We had Assassin's Creed Revelations, we had Need for Speed the Run, we had Rayman Origins, we had Zelda, we had a new Mario.
Saints Row and Halo and...
Saints Row and Halo. So yeah, there's a lot of games to talk about. I doubt we all picked them up. I want to kick it off this week because I've been playing Nintendo 2 this past week. And I will just start off, you know, I talked about Super Mario 3D and last week when I picked it up. Since then, I've been able to complete the first half of the game. And it's very awkward to talk about it because I tweeted this on Twitter. And if the game is essentially broken up into two halves, but it's one game, basically you have a campaign that goes from World 1 to World 8. You beat that, you beat the game, technically speaking. But after that, you open it up. And there's another world 1 through 8. These are the special worlds 1 through 8. And, you know, just even though they're called special, they're not technically remixes of the first world 1 through 8. For the most part, they're completely different levels, or they're levels with modifications, either enemy placements or just different...
So it's kind of like hard mode?
It's kind of like hard mode, but it's more like... I don't know. It's more like a second quest, I guess. Think of it as kind. I don't want to say it's like Master Quest because Master Quest was still Ocarina of Time, just remake. This is just. I mean, it's radically different stages. Like some of them take the same ideas from the first half of the game, but they just take them in principle, and it's radically different ideas. It's really fun. I made this comment yesterday on Twitter, and I just want to clarify. I think it embodies what I would consider the perfect handheld title, which I just want to clarify does not mean I think it's a perfect game. But I think the fact is each level's, you know, crafted so that you can... I mean, I did this when I was on Life Itself. Each level can be bested in less than a minute. Going through it the first time, you usually take on because you want to explore. You want to find the 3 coins or whatever. So on Life Itself, the levels are about 2 to 3 minutes long. They're not that long, but that's why it works for handheld.
Well, this is what Nintendo's always about with handhelds anyway. It's why Pokemon's handheld exclusive because it really plays well with, you can pick it up and put it down at pretty much any point. And yeah, it's just Nintendo's strategy with their handhelds, and I personally like it. I don't like having to be chained to it for 10 minutes because, you know.
You can't find a safe point
or
something.
Yeah, I've played Kirby Mass Attack, and that game really, like, it's good, but the levels are just so long. They take, like, 10 to 15 minutes each to beat, and, yeah, that kind of was...
defeats the purpose of being a handheld.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like, it's like a smartphone game done well. It's a game you pick up. You can play it one or... Like, I remember the first thing I tweeted about when I got the game is that I beat the first world on my train ride home, which was, like, 45 minutes. And at the time, I'm thinking, that's really short. But then, you know, thinking about it, and I've taken it out multiple times since then, Zelda, I end up just going out in the city, thinking about it is if I have 10 minutes, I put it out, 2 or 3 levels done, it feels like I'm making forward progress. The game saves after every stage, so it's not like, crap, I have to get to this far before I can save. It's like, you know what, this is the type of experience I want. It's a bite-sized game in a full package, and you get a complete experience. You get 8 levels, you get boss battles, you get power-ups, and you can go back in each stage. You can set your, you can better your time, which wasn't a thing I was doing until I started getting street passes, spot passes, I guess. And those apparently give you rival time, so you know, like, you randomly get best times from other people.
Cool. Really?
So I got those, and I wanted to beat their
time. Does it give you ghosts?
I haven't seen that feature yet, and I've been playing for a little bit.
Have you got any spot passes yet?
No, I haven't. I've just been getting street passes.
Well, I don't know the difference between the two. I think Nintendo officially calls us. I think technically if it exchanges data, it's spot passes. Street passes are like more of the me things.
Yeah.
I have no idea. They fall under the same category of social interaction, yeah, without actually interacting with people.
Like if the spot passes give you more time. The street passes, I know, they give you items from other players. And yeah, they also give you the mystery boxes.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I haven't seen any best times from people.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen, like, maybe it's your friends' list, but if you look at, if you go to a stage, it's sometimes if you just stay there, on the second screen, it's like rivals' time, and then it's like, you know, like 1:58, and then it's like your best time. So I see that, I'm like, I'm going to best your time. The other thing, and this is kind of more the hard mode, and this is the same way the Galaxy games did it without actually making it harder, is you play as Luigi, and because Luigi controls a lot looser than Mario, he doesn't stop on the dime, for example, and he jumps a lot wider. Yeah. It becomes like a different type of game because you have to plan your movements differently than Mario, because Mario Mario's kind of pinpoint accurate, and Luigi's more like, yeah, and this was an issue that, you know, Luigi doesn't stop. He kind of sits to a stop, so you have to account for his forward momentum when you do stop. But yeah,
there's no reason to play it again.
Yeah, and and the same thing, again, it's kind of like Nintendo's inbuilt achievement system is their star system. I know New Super Mario Bros. Wii and New Super Mario Bros. DS had this, is that like, you complete the game, you get 1 star on your profile. You compete, like, you get all the coins, you get 2 stars, you unlock Luigi. So basically, at the end of the day, you can end up with 5 stars total for doing everything in the game. And this is something that also shows up on Spot Pass, or Street Pass, whatever you want to call it. So, if somebody has it, it shows up as 4 stars on their profile when you see it. Right now I'm only at 2 stars, and I'm really working my way through to get at least 3. just because I want that, and I think if you don't, and I haven't seen this yet, if you don't see the Tanuki, the P-Wing or the, invisible Tanuki suit, you're golden. And that's the other thing I wanted to mention, is for some odd reason, one of those costumes power-ups doesn't open up until you beat the game. I mean, it's still the Tanuki tail, but, during the second half of the game, you can get the Tanuki tail that turns into a statue.
Ooh, that's cool.
And for some reason, that's not in the main game.
Odd. That's very strange.
But, you know, again, it's weird. And Nintendo is really smart about this, and we'll get to this when I mention Zelda as well. Is that they have, Zelda's a bit more ham-fisted, but they have tutorials in the game. But the tutorials are as, okay, you stop and do this. It's more as like, oh, you're either going to go into a situation where you're forced to do it, or you see an enemy doing it. Like, the first time they show you that you can glide with the Tanuki tail is you see a Goomba with it, and he does that move, and then you realize that Mario can do it.
See, that's the way how I prefer it that way, because it's not shoving it in your face. Because if you knew it already, then you can just ignore it. But if you didn't, you can just notice it and learn from it.
Yeah. And it's the same way that I think...
more natural.
Yeah, it's the same way that you learn about, like, the tailspin, I think, from one of the toads, because you'll see that, because everybody has a Tanuki tail in this game.
Yeah, it's true. Even Bowser has.
Yeah. So, yeah, everybody has a Tanuki tail, and you'll see it. And, yeah, you'll have enemies who'll just turn around, and you realize that Mario can do that as well. And, again, like, ideas are introduced to you through natural gameplay. They'll have... like, for example, one of the ideas they introduced later on in the game is the idea of a movement of platforms that change, they alternate between blue and red, but it depends on when Mario jumps. So, like, he'll jump, it's red, he'll jump again, it's blue. And how they introduce this to you is, like, you're on a stage, There's a blue and red one. You jump, it changes from blue to red and vice versa. There's no way for Mario to die, but you get the idea that every time he jumps, it changes color. And that's, you know, then that's the cool. entire level.
Yeah.
And, but you already knew that because they introduced it to you in a safe manner where it's like, oh, as he jumps, this changes colors. I'm going to need to know how to do this without calling out, like, hey, Mario, look, every time you jump, this changes colors.
That's pretty cool.
Which is odd because they, and going to Zelda, they don't, they have a hard time doing this with the 3D games. The 3D games, I understand why. They do introduce a tutorial, but they usually give you like a natural tutorial where it's, it's given to you through thematically throughout the story. And have any of you picked up Zelda?
No, not this week.
Okay. Well, Zelda is essentially, I think the first 2 hours are a tutorial, but it doesn't feel like a tutorial. It does hold your hand and it tells you stuff, but it's kind of, to me, I think what they do, and this is why I think it's much better than Twilight Princess, as far as openings go, is that the 2 hour tutorial, whatever you want to call it, is more of a world building device where you're introduced to the Link, you're introduced to Zelda, and you're introduced to the, natives of Skyoft. And it just, as you know, as you go through, it introduces various pieces of the story to you and part of the gameplay, but it's still building up this story where it's making it a more intimate, you know, it's like Wind Waker where they put Link and Zelda at the forefront of the story and not necessarily like the Triforce and the Master. It's about the characters and they put them up in center and they spend a lot of time building up their relationship and building up, you don't know, you're about them, you're about, you're hearing about Zelda's father, you're hearing about there's a guy in town who has a crush on Zelda and he picks on Link because Link and Zelda have been best friends since they were babies or kids. You're hearing about, it's kind of weird, they have a knighthood, which is what Link's, his green tunic is the garb of the knighthood. But as far as I know, there's no other people in Skyoff for them to actually be threatened, so they don't need a knighthood. But, it's there to make sense of the fact that you get your first sword from your sparring teacher and stuff like that. And then, it's really hard because I know it just came out today, which means a lot of people don't have Zelda Painted now, so you too wouldn't. And I don't want to really spoil it because even tomorrow won't be that much different, but, I'm really enjoying the game so far. Oddly enough, I don't like the tutorial segment for flying because it's more of a race than anything else. But when you're given the ability to go on your own and just fly, it's really fun. It's probably my favorite way to travel in a Zelda game to date. It gives you the freedom, the freedom of exploration, like the King of the Red Seas.
Yeah.
But you don't have, you're not dependent on the wind and stopping and momentum and stuff like that.
It just lets you go and do whatever you want.
Yeah. So it's like Epona meets the King of Red Seas where you kind of have a creature you control, but the sky's an open world. And just like Wind Waker, it is kind of barren, but the overworld, it's not even an overworld. The sky is so much more, it's so much smaller than Wind Waker, so you're not going for like 5 minutes and not seeing anything.
Yeah.
But just like Wind Waker, they introduce that random element where you'll randomly get storms in the middle of your flying, so you just can't leave it going. So yeah, it is that as well.
Here's a question: is it worth the 7.5?
Do we have to
hung, draw, and quarter the reviewer at GameSpot?
I don't want to pick on any reviewers if we had an issue. I've put in 12 hours of the game so far. I am enjoying it immensely. I haven't had any issues with controls. If people say you can just waggle to your heart's content, I don't necessarily believe that's true. There's enemies in that game that if you waggle, they will kick your butt. So far I've met, the first boss, for example, I'm sure you've all seen this, is the guy from the E3 demo. You just can't waggle against him, or he'll grab your sword. He only grabbed my sword once, but he'll grab it in your hand and you have to shake it out before then. But if he does take it away from you, he starts using it against you and he'll toss it like a weapon. What else? Then in the second dungeon, there's an enemy that does, those are the people from Zelda games. I want to say they're Star Fox or the Skeletons. It's like, those are the people. Basically, and they have one arm that they can protect, and again, you can't waggle against them. And then the third dungeon introduced enemies that if you waggle against, it harms you because they're electrified, so if you don't hit them properly, you take damage anyhow, so you just can't go about wagging against them. So, I mean, I don't know what game the people who are saying you can just waggle and get away with it played, but it's not how I've been playing it from my experience. And I have to say, so far, the beetle is probably one of my favorite items in a Zelda game to date. It's so versatile. you know, just being able, I mean, right, you know, it's basically used as a long-range weapon. It's kind of like if you've played Batman Arkham City or Arkham Asylum, it's like the guided Batarang.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, like Batman, you get an upgrade for it on, which I just got. That makes it even more badass. And it becomes an offensive weapon as well. So it's really versatile. So far, I've kind of gone back to all my weapons. I've used the upgrade system. I've up to 3 shields now. I broke my first one. It kind of sucks because your shields are kind of, like, you can parry with them, but if you don't use it properly, it takes damage, and I know you can take so much. So my first shield I broke on the Deconuts. You know those people that shoot the stuff and you have to shoot back at them. You have to time it properly. It's not like, oh, green at time. You can just hold it and then it will shoot back. You have to time it so that you hit it when it hits your shield so that it flies. If you just hit it early, it's just going to damage your shield and break. And then, you know, like my first shield, like most Zelda games, was a wooden shield. And the second dungeon, like in a lot of Zelda games, is a fire dungeon. So a wooden shield in the fire dungeon doesn't make sense. So I had to get a metal shield. But a metal shield in the third dungeon with electric enemies doesn't make sense. I had to get an upgraded wooden shield, so I got my wooden shield. You collect various things from enemies. You can, you know, you get a bug net to catch bugs and stuff, and you can use that stuff to upgrade your weapon. So I've upgraded both of my shields once. You can upgrade your sync shot, and I believe you can upgrade your bug net. Those are the 4 items I have so far that you can upgrade. Like, it doesn't seem like it's a major part of the game, but it does seem like something to mess around with. Kind of fun to do, and it does have its benefits, but so far it doesn't look like the game discourages you from not upgrading, which, you know, again, isn't an issue. I think if you can put it in there and give people the choice mm-hmm. to say, you know what, I want a best shield, and I want the best shield within the first, I'm assuming it's not the best shield in the game, but I want the best version of the shield as soon as I can, so you go out of your way, you collect bugs, you kill enemies and collect the stuff they leave behind, and you get your shield as soon as you can. The other thing, and this is the biggest thing to me right now, is the art style. It truly looks fantastic. It's a really nice looking art style, except when you're up close to anything, then it becomes ugly because everything, and it goes with the style where everything's like this painted watercolor look, and it really does work well in motion, but when you get up close, it just looks like a very mess of textures. So that's really jarring, I think, where, like, you see stuff in the distance, and it fades out, and it just looks so great, and then you'll get, like, something next to you, and it's like, ugh. So, I mean, granted, that's part of it, it's the power of the Wii, but it's just really one of those things that stood out to me.
Well, if you play it on PC, you can play it in 1080p. Oh. You can always do that.
Yeah, you can, but I mean, if you blur up textures that are sub HD and HD, doesn't that make it?
Well, it seems to look pretty good. I don't know.
No, the game in general looks pretty good.
Yeah, it's the art style. That's what Wii games have all really been about, though, more art style than technical prowess, because obviously you've got limited.
Yeah, and it worked, and it's always worked, and Nintendo's pretty smart at that. But it does show in this game because, like, the character models are nice, the art style's nice, the world's nice. But anything, like, up close, if you're looking at, like, a wall or ground or grass and stuff, it looks really odd because it looks like, it does look like paint, but that doesn't look as pretty in up close.
Yeah.
That looks like a mess on the floor. So, yeah, that's what I've been saying. What about you two?
Well, I've been playing some Dota 2 because my friend got into the beta and he gave me one of his invites, and it's a pretty good game. It's it's if you're new to that sort of thing, then it's an uphill struggle to learn because they've got 50 out of the 100 heroes in there, and you need to learn or be lambasted by the community that's actually playing it, because I found out while spectating another game. Actually, I think it's the first Source game that I've actually gone, wow, at the visuals. I mean, Valve has always, like, because Source Engine is not the greatest, hasn't produced the greatest looking games, but I'm quite happy with sort of the style that Dota 2 and Valve are going after with that. I also played, as everybody knows, the remake of Halo, which
you reviewed.
I reviewed, and it. I wish they remade more games. In fact, there are games out there that I wish they just ported over to the current gen consoles. It doesn't matter whether they remake them or not, but this is how they need to remake games. I'm a bit disappointed with the Kinect functionality. I can't get access to because I don't own a Kinect, because it could easily be used without a Kinect. But oh, and I found actually have one problem with it. There is one exploit in the game that doesn't work anymore because they tried to put in a new physics engine but got it to act like the old physics engine, and instead they broke a glitch. I was not happy with that. So other than that, the game looks fantastic. I'm spoiled by the new graphics. I can't play it on old graphics anymore.
Well, that makes sense. I think one thing is, and maybe it's just me, it seems like a lot of people either weren't paying attention or didn't. Because a lot of people are kind of disappointed that it's not Halo 1 plus GTA Online. And
so I was watching, I was reading some reactions to this, and they were talking about how, 343 wouldn't have spent the time putting netcode where there wasn't netcode, even though there was netcode, because you could play Halo 1 over LAN, even on the Xbox. I think the problem, the reasoning for putting new maps, remastering old maps and putting them into Reach, was the fact that it would split up the community. They're already splitting up the community as it is by adding new maps in, and it would just make it even worse by just sort of revamping the original multiplayer. And to be honest, there was a lot of people that didn't play Halo for the multiplayer. A lot of people remember it for simply the way it played and the story, because, you know, it started everything. And, you know, if you want Halo multiplayer, go play it on PC. It's not a taxing game. The multiplayer still has a lot of people playing it on PC. You can play the demo on PC with a ton of people. You know, it's not like they're taking away something, because it still works on PC. So, you know, and although I'm not a fan of the anniversary playlists on Reach, the maps are really well made. They've changed the maps in places that they sort of needed to be changed, and they added some cool little Easter eggs in them, and I just don't think it's a problem. I bought the game for the single player, as most people did. And I know people that have bought Halo, the remake of Halo, because they've played Reach. That was their first Halo game, and they want to keep playing the story. So, you know, I just don't think it. I think people are making too big of a deal that they didn't have the multiplayer in. You get co-op over Xbox Live, and if you're somebody who just goes after a game just for its multiplayer, then why aren't you playing Call of Duty instead?
And, well, I mean, people find stuff to complain about on the internet. I just find it odd, because, like, one of my friends, like, one of the first things people mentioned to me when they was that, and I'm like, you know, it was one of the first things they announced at E3. Well, I guess they didn't announce it, because they were kind of vague, but it was one of the first things that came out of E3, that this wasn't going to have the, and it makes sense. I mean,
and not only that, if you don't live in Europe, it's a budget-priced game. So
what price is it in Europe?
Well, let's say this, the full price for Black Ops, not Black Friday, well, Call of Duty games on release is $44.99. Most other games, they retail at $39.99 when they're released, and Halo is going at $34.99. So
it's a budget, just not a major budget.
Even though I got quite a big discount on it myself, so, you know.
It's not the $20.
It's we pay more than Americans do. Let's put it that way.
But yeah, if you get it in America, you're getting it at a budget price, so you can't expect everything to be there. What they have put in there is, I think, worth the money, you know, because although the music isn't Martin O'Donnell, it's pretty good. The new sound effects are really cool if you play in the new mode. And the graphics, like, there are some places where I was blown away, let's put it that way. You know, I think you're expecting too much for the money if you want the multiplayer as well.
I mean, it depends, and you made a point about this before in your review as well. It is one of the few remakes that is actually a remake. It's not just a graphical.
Yeah.
It is a graphical overhaul. But
yeah, it's not just. That's just up-res the textures.
Yeah, it's not like up-res the texture card.
They redid everything, and they added some new stuff in. You know, and it's faithful to the original game, even though a completely different team worked on it. And you know, for what it is, it's what you expect Halo to be in 2011. You know, it's just people picking fault because they can, complaining about the multiplayer.
Yeah. And what about you, Adam? What have you been playing?
What have I been playing? Technically this week I had a big opportunity to play games because lack of schoolwork, morning classes got canceled. So I've been playing Skyrim, which I'm just loving that game so far. It's so much fun.
You don't need to tell anyone how good that game is.
Yeah. I've been sticking with the main quest more than just going off my own and doing other things, but even still I'm really enjoying it. I killed one dragon so far. Trying to think what else I did in that game. That's about it, pretty much. I got a couple of dragon powers. And I've just kind of been roaming around, but mostly sticking to the main quest. My one concern with the game, like, I'm sure this is just something that happens to everyone, it's kind of cool that it does in a way, is that there are these high-level enemies or these crazy ones like yetis or trolls that you run into and you're pretty low. I'm pretty low level, like level 4 or something, and they attack me. And instead of attacking them back, I pretty much have to avoid them, walk around them. But, I mean, that's pretty cool because, like in real life, not that anything in Skyrim is something that would happen in real life, but you'd have to run into enemies that are more powerful than you at one point or another. I thought that was really cool. And then what else have I been playing? Uncharted 3 I've been playing. Mostly the single player campaign, the multiplayer, which I played mostly in October with the whole subway thing is awesome. I still go back to it. The single player, like the one thing I'm amazed by is the narrative of Uncharted 3. Like it's a really good story. And I'm not gonna lie, there's not too many good stories in video games. And Uncharted 3 is like one of the first next to like the God of War trilogy, the Gears of War trilogy. Like Uncharted 3 is up there and possibly surpassing them.
Gears of War is an interesting one. I give it credit because it's one of the few games, titles, franchises that I know of that keeps a compelling narrative. I don't want to say compelling, that keeps a straight narrative throughout three games and actually tells a story from beginning to end.
Really?
You don't feel, I know that there's a lot of questions left at the end of Gears of War.
It's not even, it wasn't even that. It was the fact that I just thought the game was like, the first game was, here's a war. And then the second game was, at the end, it was like, oh shit, it's getting a little bit worse. And then at the end was like, oh my god, magic device that kills everything.
True.
That's what I thought Gears of War amounted to. And, Gears, and this is the thing that I have with like people's perceptions of stories, especially with Uncharted, is people were confusing good character dialogue with good story.
Yeah,
because we've got Uncharted, which is, you know, hint of treasure, developments of treasure, it may be over here, it's a thing that bad guys want to weaponize, we need to destroy it.
Yeah, I think, and we had this discussion last year when we were trying to determine our game of the year, where I think Mass Effect 2 kind of had the same reputation.
Yeah.
But Mass Effect 2 has a pretty poor story. It has excellent characters, and a lot of people confuse
I agree with
a
that.
Character a lot of people confuse a great characterization with a great story. It's not necessarily the same thing. You can have great characters and a poor story the same way you can have poor characters and a great story. And Uncharted, I agree with Daniel, has interesting characters and has interesting character dynamics. I think the relationship between Nathan and Sully and Nathan and Elena is interesting, and that's kind of what we don't see often in video games, are relationships with characters that's able to grow and develop over the course of three games. But the story itself is, as Daniel says, kind of, it's not hokey, but it is kind of like, okay, Drake has this mission, he finds this map, the bad guys show up, they're one step ahead of Drake, Drake chases them down, you know, Drake, you know, outsmarts them, they outsmart him again, it ends in a fight, and that's pretty much all three Uncharted games in a nutshell. There's twists and turns along the way, and it's an awesome ride, I won't deny that, but I wouldn't, you know, and this is an issue I have with a lot of video game stories, I think it's like people tend to want to build them up to be greater things than they really are at times, just because we don't have many compelling video game narratives. Most of them do kind of come down to, you know, good versus evil, save the world type plots. They might vary in the details and the levels of it, but that's basically what it is. And there's no problem with it, but if you want to call a spade, that's what most video game stories are. They're pretty basic. They tend to have interesting characters, which can go a long way. It's why it's why Uncharted works. It's why I love Uncharted. It's because I love the character Nathan Drake, and I love the characters that they surround him with. It's one of the reasons it's one of the reasons people cried at Gears of War 3 is because they've grown with these characters for 4 or 5 years now. But I would never say that either series has what I would call a great story.
Well, and this is the thing with and it's not just a particular issue with those games, it's a thing with the medium, for the moment at least.
Mm-hmm.
But,
I agree. No one's really found that key to creating a great story with video games. I mean, I think Heavy Rain is the one big exception. Uncharted 3 might come close to that, but I mean, it's very hard to tell stories in the medium, especially when people, you know, might play the game for a little bit, then put it down for a month and come back to it. There's no way to kind of easily go back and figure out where you were. The movie, they're kind of short. You could just restart it. But with a game that's 10 hours, you can't necessarily do that.
And see, this is where I tend to have this disconnect. And one of the reasons is that one of the things is a lot of video game companies and gamers as well want to push video games into the realm of a cinematic experience. Yeah. Where you tell through, you tell the story through a 50 minute cutscene. What games and gamers really should be striving for is finding a medium, or finding a way for video games to convey stories that's very unique to video games. I always use the example of stuff like then it's Uncharted and Prince of Persia, for example, where you aren't really necessarily told this. You have cutscenes in the game, but a lot of the story is told between how the character interacts with the world and their reactions to it, because it's something you get to experience along with the character, so it makes sense for them to comment on that. Another example I like to use is BioShock and Batman Arkham City, or Borderlands does this as well, where you find environmental story elements, where you find, things on the wall, but also you'll find recordings, or you'll find messages, or you'll find stuff from society before that, and you're able to listen in on that, but it doesn't impede the game, and because you can do it while you're playing the game, and it still gives you pieces of the story. Anytime you take away control from the gamer, even if it's for 50 seconds or it's for 10 minutes, I feel like you're cheating them of the experience, because it is an interactive medium first and foremost.
Yep. And also, not all games really need a story. I mean, sometimes I can't really think of a good example. They'll just plop this story into a game which really just doesn't need one. People just want to play it, not listen to this
Serious Sam.
Crap narrative. Yeah.
I was gonna say Sonic 2006.
There's some games you just want to play. You don't really need a story. So there needs to be that balance where if you have a good story to tell, tell it. But if you have a good game, but not a good story, just let them play the game and don't worry about the story. Just focus on the experience that you want. If it's a cinematic experience, focus on the cutscenes. If you want a great gameplay experience, like let's say Call of Duty, don't focus on that as much.
Yeah, and this is an issue, and this is actually something that came up this week when I forget, it was the people who are in Skyrim, I think, who were saying that there needs to be video game pricing disparity, that, you know, not every game's worth $60. But the problem with that is that everybody thinks their game is worth $60, so everybody charges $60. But you'll say, oh, that guy needs to charge us, but my game's worth $60. And it's the same way, like, oh, my story's awesome, so I want to tell this story, when it's not necessarily true, and that, you know, sometimes you're blinded by the fact that maybe you think this is awesome, and you don't know it until it's out if you are right or wrong. And a lot of people, and I've heard this before, and it always drives me nuts, is like people will say, I can't play a game without a story. Why am I doing what I'm doing?
Yeah.
And to me, that's just like you're missing the point. You're supposed to be doing what you're doing because it motivates, the game motivates you in some fashion, not just because I want to be fed morsels of the story every hour or so. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, people play Tetris. It isn't because, you know, you want to have this compelling narrative about the Tetramo and how he seeks to find acceptance in society by finding his place in the world.
You just want to play because it's fun.
Yeah, and it's the same thing with Angry Birds. I'm assuming there's a story. Those birds have to be angry at the little cow pig thingies. Yeah. But, you know, the game doesn't start off with a 20-minute cutscene explaining why there's a feud between these two races of animals.
Yeah, it's just saying there is one. And, like, that's how simple video game stories can be, or how simple they have to be in some cases. Just, like, there's a problem, now go solve it, and we won't kind of explain anything. There's some birds trapped in cages, pigs trap them, it's your job to save them. That's literally all they ever needed to explain, and it works.
Yeah, and I think also that sometimes you have to realize that this is more. I mean, I think one of my favorite film franchises is the Toy Story series.
Oh, yeah.
And as much as I love them, they really have pretty basic plots. And they all kind of, you know, but they have themes that are very prevalent, but the actual plot is pretty basic. But it works because you kind of introduce this plot. You don't make, you know, because you know, and this happens with a lot of video games, is you want twists and turns. So you always have to make up some silly stuff that just after a while, and one of the examples of this is True Crimes. I don't know if any of you have ever played it.
No.
But True Crimes, by the time you get to the end of the game, turns from a, you know, gritty cop show to something about supernatural dragons and stuff. And there's a huge disconnect somewhere along the line of what this game started out to be and what this game ended up being. If you wanted to go in the realm of fantasy, you should have went all fantasy. If you wanted to go in the realm of gritty realism, you had gritty realism. You don't decide halfway through the game, you know what, this is kind of boring. Let's spice it up.
Yeah, definitely.
So have you two been paying anything else since apparently we've gone like a 30-minute tangent?
Long tangent, but what else? I've been playing Super Mario 3D Land a lot. I'm so addicted to that game. I'm on the 8th world right now, almost up to that final fight with who I believe is Bowser.
In a Mario game.
In a Mario game.
That's surprising.
Yeah,
that's
true.
That's a franchise that I think a lot of people always, you know, mock for not having a great story. It's always about him saving a princess. I mean, and at the end of the day, that's all you need.
Yep.
I didn't mention this when I was, I love the way they do the transitions. I mean, granted, it's a photograph and it's extremely lazy, but it's so great.
Yeah.
Getting like that, the artwork and having his reaction.
Yeah, the pictures are hilarious and the 3D in them looks awesome.
Oh, man, that was another thing I didn't touch on, but what are your thoughts on the 3D in that game?
I think it's really cool. Like, the first time I tried out Super Mario 3D Land was last month at New York Comic Con, and I was just blown away by the 3D and how it worked. Like, there are certain things you can't see unless you have the 3D on. Or you can see them, but you can't see them. It won't be as obvious.
Yeah.
And then, and now that I'm actually playing it and going through it, I feel like the 3D doesn't do as much to the game as I originally thought it did. Like, it still looks incredible, and it really does. But, and I mean, the game, when you turn the 3D on, the game just looks more alive, more awesome, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really add anything to the experience. There are a few times where it's like, it shows something in 2D and then you turn 3D on and then it becomes more obvious. Like, if you're on the start menu and you wait a little bit, it shows you one of those.
Yeah.
But other than that, I haven't really seen too much from the 3D other than, you know, the long drops and how awesome it looks and how more alive the game feels with it.
Yeah, I will say this, and this is one of the things I've, is that the 3D, as far as, it's pretty much mandatory in the second quest. It's not, I mean, it's still the same idea that, you know, the 3D just enhances the experience, but there are, you know, like, the biggest thing, as you said, I think it more works with the verticality, because especially at like, the stages where you're dropping long distances and you have to land on Goomba heads so that you can, you know, bounce off and use for the, that's kind of when it really shines. And there are stages where, like you said, it's kind of, it's a great use of 3D. I still don't think it proves 3D as a concept. It's more, the 3D in this game, as you said, is more of a trick of perspective where it's just kind of like, oh, you see, like, if you look at 2D, these two clouds look like they're on the same level. But you turn on 3D and you realize that this one's actually beneath it. And stuff like that. So there's that element, but it's not really, like, you can go through the whole game without it and still beat it, I think. But, and even like there are rooms you go through certain times that need 3D, but usually they have a button that will switch perspective for you anyhow.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's a great, I think, you know, it's kind of the proof of concept, and I actually think, I think this says so, but coming up, Mario Kart uses it well as well for their gyro segments. Go on.
I tried out Mario Kart 7 at Comic-Con. I was not impressed with the 3D at all. I just didn't see it when I was racing. It wasn't obvious to me at all.
The only time it's not obvious when you're racing. The only time it ever came in handy, I think, was when you had the air segments with the gliders.
And oh, yeah.
And you can kind of see parts where, like, oh, this will come in handy because, like, you know, like, you can navigate it and there's certain, you know, coins and pickups in the air that are in different spaces. But other than that, you're right. But I think that's what 3D is going to have to be for now, is that it's going to be a way to kind of enhance your experience without changing it too much. Because, and I said this when Nintendo announced the 3DS Slider, is that 3D was never going to be a dominant feature of any game because they made it so that you can turn it off. If they had said that this is an all 3D system, I think it would be different. But, you know, like sometimes, it happened with the Wii where a lot of people are like, I don't like motion control, so I don't like the system. Here it's like, I don't like 3D, you can turn it off. I know you'll get complaints like, what's the point of the system if you can turn off its main feature? And the point of any system, as I always believe, is you'll still get amazing games with or without 3D.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Even though I'm a huge supporter of 3D and love it, I definitely agree that it's not going to ever take over a game and become dominant, at least not now, especially when there's a lot of preconceived notions about 3D, according to a lot of people. Like, for instance, I'll give it a third example of New York Comic Con while I was there, and some huge Pokemon fan was about to try out Pokemon Rumble Blast. She looks at the screen, she acts as if her eyes were on fire. She's like, oh, turn that off. And someone one of the Nintendo guys slid the 3D slider off. And just like, you know, that kind of proved to me it's not really going to go places for a little while, 3D at least.
Yeah. I mean, I was one of those people too, but, you know, like Mario, the thing is, and this probably is a personal thing, is like after using Mario extensively, or the 3D extensively, I should say, is that I end up seeing a lot of things in 3D now. Like, I'll be typing, and like especially on Twitter, like, the reply box will pop out in front of everything else, and it's just kind of, like, my eyes are kind of focused, so trained on a 3D and Mario, like, it's actually doing that with other two-dimensional surfaces now.
The first week I had my 3DS, I had that exact problem, and it's going to take, like, a week or two for that to go away, but eventually you'll just get used to it. But I remember that, like, when I was typing a paper, words were, like, popping out of the screen. I'm like, how is that happening?
Yeah, exactly. It's like you train your eyes to focus so much on it that it starts seeing everything in that vision.
Yep, that'll change. It's almost like quitting smoking. There's, like, a process to it. And then once you get past the hump of just using 3D so much that when you look at 2D or 3D, everything just is back to normal. You don't get the headaches. You don't get the eye strain.
Yeah, so, I mean, have you been playing anything else?
Yep, one more. 3D Classics, Kirby's Adventure.
How is that?
Because good.
I saw the video. I mean, I'm assuming the game holds up well, but the 3D looks like it's just like, oh, this is the background, this is Kirby, and that's about it.
That's pretty much it. I mean, the one complaint I have is how small the screen is. Like, if you go on the eShop and watch a video of it or see it, it's just like, it's not widescreen. It's like this little square in the center. But even still, a 3D effect is kind of cool. But I mean, it's exactly what you'd expect and exactly what you've seen in other 3D classics games, which is kind of like, here's the foreground, here's the background. It's basically in layers.
Yeah.
So it doesn't add anything to the game, but it just kind of looks cooler. And plus the opportunity, because Kirby's Adventure is one of the best NES games I've ever played, one of my personal favorites. So just the opportunity to have that on the go on my 3DS at any time was enticing enough for me, hence the 3D as well.
Okay. And I think that's it. I mean, we have 45 minutes of what we've been saying. So, I mean, granted, we had an interesting discussion on stories and video games and this, that. And there's really not that much news this week. I mean, since we talked about Mario, we might as well start off with Mario and Peter. For those who don't know, Peter is People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. And they took offense to the fact that Mario is Tanuki suit in the video game Super Mario 3D, and I don't know why it took them some
20 years
to realize that he wears it. Nor did they have any issues from he wore a bee suit and a penguin suit within the last 3 years.
No. Anyway, and he stomps on turtles. They forgot about that. You know. And then they made a really crappy like Flash game, where you're playing as like the Tanuki and you're chasing after Mario, like with your fur on, and he's covered in blood, and I was just like, oh my god! And then, as if it couldn't get any worse, I'm like, oh, don't worry, guys, we're just joking. What?
Yeah, I think that proved, and I wanted to tweet this, but I figured somebody would get it. It's that it proves that at the end of the day, the only thing crazier than Peter is Nintendo fans.
I can't believe anyone still pays attention to Peter, to be honest, because, you know, they're getting the attention, and if we were all to just leave them alone, they would...
But that's the thing, it's like, people say that, but, you know, they always do. It's the same thing with, like, the Westboro Baptist Church, where,
yeah,
like, they're a bunch of idiots, but they keep on pushing the boundaries, and people can... Because they do find new ways to insult people and kind of drive that media hum-hum. So yeah, it is that.
It just makes me think back to the joke that Edmund McMillan said when the whole Peter attacked Super Meat Boy, and it was, how many Peter members does it take to change a light bulb? And the answer is none, because Peter can't change anything.
Yeah, pretty much that. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things, where, like, if they had, it's the same mentality I have towards child rearing, is that if you take up an argument and a fight with somebody on everything they do wrong, then nothing they do wrong seems important, because it's like you have an issue with everything. If they were to pick and choose their battles where they actually, like, okay, you know, this is our main cause, we're going after this, that's when you're taken serious. But, you know, going after video games, going after people wearing fur coats doesn't get your message across. That just turns people against you. Because I'm assuming a lot of people are kind of for their message. They're, you know, they're against animal cruelty, but they're not for how Peter goes
well,
about it.
Well, because Peter just goes, yeah, they just go on the most retarded methods about it when, you know, Nintendo hasn't harmed a single animal, not that I'm aware of anyway, especially not making the Tanuki suit skin for Mario.
Especially when the Tanuki suit in the franchise comes from a tree.
Well, there
you
go.
I mean, they didn't kill animals to make it.
But, yeah, the idea is that he wears fur, so people, they assume that naturally it means that Nintendo's endorsing it. Even though I was under the impression that Tanukis were mythical creatures, there are, like, a Tanuki-esque animals called the Tanuki, spelled differently. They're, like, Japanese dog-looking creatures. Where Mario just kills it to a raccoon.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Oh, I also have a pair of Tanuki tails and ears now, so hopefully Peter's not upset at me for that. In addition to that, while we're on the land in Japan, Square Enix has decided to license Unreal Engine for multiple games, which I find kind of sad, because didn't Square just create their own next-gen engine?
Yeah, yep. That's quite... I think the whole idea of creating an engine is, you know, so you can kind of make your own games on it. It's what Valve does, it's what Bungie does, it's what
is what Epic does. You know? Even if they do license out their engine, I don't understand. There's a lot of things that Square Enix does nowadays, and I just don't get it. That, you know, I mean, a real engine works and it's fine, but I'm assuming that they decided to make their own engine because, you know, they can obviously get more out of the hardware that suits what they need to do than what Epic have, and yet they just went and licensed it anyway. Square Enix confused me. I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't know, because as far as I know, I think Final Fantasy 13 2 might have been the first game made on the Crystal Engine or something.
Wait, hang on. Do we know if this is for Western games? Or?
Well, that's the thing. We don't.
Because if it's for Western games, then that's more understandable.
Yeah, but they already use it for games, because Batman uses, no. But yeah, Square did Batman. Well, I guess Eidos did Batman. The first one, and that was Unreal and stuff like that. I'm assuming Eidos uses the Unreal Engine for some of their games. Yeah, well, DSX uses it, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't. No, I don't think so. Eidos don't do Batman, that's WB.
No, Eidos, the first one, was, and then WB took it in.
Oh, right, yeah.
Second one. Which makes sense. I mean, I'm going to take my property, too. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes. And heck, this is my favorite news because it always drives me up the wall. And this goes back to video gamers wanting video games to be movies. Is that Activision announced that Call of Duty has grossed $775 million worldwide for making it the biggest five-day entertainment record ever. When movies start charging me $120 per ticket, I think then it can be a fair comparison.
Yeah.
But as it stands,
well, not
now,
only that is movie. You don't get well almost infinite hours out of movies because movies aren't multiplayer games.
Well, you can get infinite hours out of movies, though. I mean, it's not.
Well, yeah, but when you buy watch. When you go into the cinema, you don't get infinite hours. You get the time of the movie, and then that's it. You have to pay another fee to get it.
That's true, but I mean, it's like, and that speaks to your point. It's like, do you consider video games to be more akin to a movie launch or a DVD release? Because a DVD release is kind of like you buy it once, and that's kind of
well,
your
neither
problem.
Because they're not priced similar at all.
No, they're not, and I don't know why people continue to make this comparison.
Yeah, I mean, they should just count population, not necessarily money.
And that's the thing, it won't compete, because, I mean...
Well, if a movie makes $775 million, then obviously they've got to sell a lot more, because it's maybe, what, 15... What, I don't know how it's priced in America, maybe $25 a Blu-ray.
Yeah, I think the average price for a ticket is something like $11.50 these days. So when a movie opens to $100 million, it's selling to a lot more people. It's selling to like 10 million people as compared to Call of Duty, which I think, if you know, first day was like 6.3, and then if you go for the rest of the week, I assume you're going to get an under 7 or 8 million. So yeah, I think, if you know, Call of Duty is the biggest opening in a game, and 100 million for most movies, for a big movie, is considered right. I think the biggest opening is Harry Potter, I think, and that grossed, you know, somewhere north of $200 million. So, yeah, it's kind of one of those things where, and, you know, I understand why they do it because it looks like a pretty number, but it drives me up the walls because they'll say it, and then, like, every other video game company, every other video game website will use it, and then it's kind of like, oh, you see, video games are important. Yes, video games are important, but you don't need to have a dick-waving contest at the movie industry to prove that.
Yeah.
Well, $775 million, even if there is nothing to compare to, is a lot of money.
No, it's a lot of money. Nobody's ever going to deny that. I think, but you know, it's also, you have to realize, like, is it $775 million for a game, or do you count the people who paid $50 for the Call of Duty Elite package, and, you know, people who paid $60 for the games, or people,
$120 for the special edition.
Or a hardened edition. Or there's people who buy two versions of the game. They want a hardened edition to keep, and then they get the actual game to play. So yeah, it's really difficult, you know, like when you pay for a movie, you're paying for a movie. Like, granted, nowadays you can also have like, oh, does this include their budget for 3D movies or IMAX releases, because those are more, but you're still kind of only paying for the movie once.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, is that you get the movies kind of limited in that scope where, like, You can. One person can only see one movie once. Well, they can see it multiple times, but you can only see it one at a time.
Yeah.
So even if one person really, really loved the movie and wanted to support it and buy 5 tickets to compare the price to the price of a video game, you can't do that at once, so it would be throughout the day. So yeah, there's that. And moving on, we get to talk about what Daniel wanted to talk about. If Call of Duty had a wonderful launch, Battlefield has kind of had a really iffy launch.
So, we've gone over how messed up the Battlefield 3 launch was anyway. But to add even more problems to the mix, EA promised that if you buy the limited edition of Battlefield 3, you get a copy of Battlefield 1943 for free. And, you know, I don't know about you, but if I was to get Battlefield 3 and I had a 360 or a PS3, that would entice me to get the PS3 version because I get a free game out of it. And it never materialized, and EA kind of just said, yeah, sorry, it's not happening anymore on Twitter. So they're being, so somebody's issued a class action lawsuit, and I don't blame them, because it's false advertising if they're just going to say, hey, you get this, but we're not going to give it to it anymore. You know, it's reason to hate on EA, and I'm always all for hating on EA, because, well, I don't like EA at all. I think that if you're gonna offer, if it's simple as if you're gonna say you're gonna give someone something for free for buying the game on release day, you can do it, you know.
And if you decide not to, you announce it.
All they needed to do is include a code on a piece of paper in the box.
And even then, if they could have still given it to people who registered their copy online or something,
it's absolutely uncalled for. And I mean, in the end, maybe they couldn't get the deal together, but I mean, it's just so dumb to just promise something and to just not give it away. I mean,
well, saying that, you've already got to punch in your code to get your Battlefield free copy to work online anyway, so you may as well just include it with the online pass.
Yep, exactly.
You know, and there's that. I actually, you know, they do have a legitimate grounds here, I think, because, you know, EA marketed this, and then they didn't tell people,
because only, like, I can guarantee that only a fraction of people follow EA on Twitter that bought BF3 on PS3, you know, just for this deal, so.
Yeah, and then, was it announced before the game came out open?
That was the killer. Nobody knew what they were getting into.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think people have legitimate claims to this. I'm kind of curious to see how it goes. And, you know, it's nice. It would be nice. As much as I hate, I do want to see, you know, if you promise something and you don't deliver, I want to see them kind of pay out for it.
Just deliver.
Yeah, honestly, the simplest way for them to do it, and probably much cheaper than any lawsuit, would be to say anybody who registered the game before such and such a date. Because they do keep track of it. I think you have to use an EA account even when you access it on PS3.
Yeah, you do.
So you know the people who had it.
Yeah.
Just do that, or whoever redeemed an online pass.
Because THQ did it with Saints Row 3. They promised Saints Row 3 owners on PS3 some exclusive content in the game, and it never materialized, but instead they gave out free copies of Saints Row 2 to everybody who activates their online pass.
Yeah.
You know?
And there you go.
I'm not saying THQ is a good company by any means, because they definitely have their problems, but they know how to, you know, you promise something, if you can't deliver it, you give them something else. You compensate for it.
Yeah, there you go. And I think there was one more piece of news you wanted to talk about.
I don't know what it was now.
It was the new PSN game sharing restrictions.
All right. So I know a lot of people that, they download, say, a PS1 game like Final Fantasy VII off PSN, and my friends and their friend will go, oh, you've got that game. Can you put it on my PSP for me? And he goes, yeah, because I've got, I don't know, 3 registrations remaining. That doesn't wash with Sony anymore. You only get 2 registrations. So,
yeah.
God knows what happens if you've already got 5 devices registered and you need to re-register another one of your own.
Yeah.
Because as far as I'm aware, there's no on-console option to deregister everything.
No, is it retroactive or always only forward?
I think it's retroactive. Oh no, previous purchases still hold the old policy.
So there you go. Okay. If Sony did something, all right, I suppose.
Oh, I mean, I can't fault Sony for their policy. It makes sense. I've taken advantage, but I share my PSN account. I have like 4 or 5 friends. I have 3 PSN accounts or something like that. So it's a broken.
To be fair, it's something that people do abuse, and
it's
not
a broken system.
I'm
not gonna. So I'm not gonna be mad at them for it. They changed it. I know some people are, but it was a shady practice to begin with. So if you're mad, you're probably doing something wrong.
And you know, if you download do something on PSN, you know, you get one on your PSP and one on your PS3. There you go. Or maybe one on your PS3 and one on a PS3 in a different room of the house.
I think it's 4. I think you can do 2 PS3s and 2 PSPs.
Yeah.
As of November 18, it's 2 PS3 and or PSP systems. For video content, it's 1 PS3 and up to 3. So you can only have 1 PS3 and 1 PSP or 2 PS3s or 2 PSPs for games. But for video, you can have 1 PS3 and 3 PSPs.
Well, it's going to be interesting, especially as they move into the next generation with the PS Vita, because if that counts as a second PSP or, you know, because there are people who have multiple ones. So we'll see.
But that's something that people need to be aware of, because obviously it's going to take effect from anything that you buy now on PSN.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Sony did announce it, I think, sometime in October, and they did give everybody the heads up that it would go live on November 18th. I guess that's why they were down for their 5th birthday.
Oh, and there are instructions to deactivate a console if you need to do that.
Well, yeah, I did, because I had to do that when I sold my PS3. I deactivated the old account. Because I know it would take up a shot. I think I already used up all of my thingamajiggies.
Yeah.
I think we have like 2 questions this week, and they're both kind of weird. First one is from JBNet211. What do you think will be announced about Metal Gear Solid 5?
I'm sorry, I'm going to jump the gun here. It's Hideo Kojima's last Metal Gear Solid game.
Oh yeah, of course.
4th time's the charm. This time we're gonna believe him. But yeah, I mean, Metal Gear Solid 5 was part of the news this week, but I didn't want to talk because, as far as I know, the interview doesn't actually confirm Metal Gear Solid 5. He talks about it.
Oh well, Valve talk about Half-Life Episode 3, don't they? So
I think the teaser will be at the Spike VGA Awards. And I think it'll just be a teaser, not revealing any.
See, that kind of, I mean, it depends, because they also shown Ryzen.
It'll be like
two years down the line with Ryzen, when that's all we've got is a teaser, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I guess at the same hand, they showed Ryzen the same time they showed Peace Walker, so would it be the first time?
They'll show Rising, and then they'll be like, oh, you know, maybe there's one more thing. Or at the trailer kind of turned to something else, and then it'll just kind of flash a 5 or something like that. It won't show anything special, but it'll just confirm it.
I mean, this is my own question, but here can other VGAs. We have what do you think is the major announcement? Because usually every year they have that one major game. I think last year was Uncharted 3. The year before that was Batman Arkham City. I think, you know, Skyrim was shown there. So what do you think is going to be that big game? Because right now, I mean,
might not even know. It could be BioWare's new game, whatever that is. That looks interesting, although one screenshot can't tell you a whole lot about a game until you actually see it for yourself.
That's the only thing I can think of myself, because the only thing I can think of that would be major is, like, say, a new Halo game, but that's gonna be revealed at E3, because they always are, or a new Call of Duty game, but that's gonna be revealed at E3, because they always are.
Well, they usually revealed, like, 2 weeks before during the NBA season.
So, you know, I'm not quite sure, because the VGAs is always, like, some, like, third-party company.
They're very Western centric.
And it's going to be a Western third party company, because that's all that debuts it.
I mean, it's all your rumors, but it sounds like God of War 3 would be a good, I mean, 4 would be a good contender.
I think so, yeah. There's been rumors about that, and they're probably true knowing Sony.
If it's the audience, Sony likes the VGAs, it makes sense.
Well, they did Uncharted 3 last year's one, didn't they?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and they did Uncharted 2 as well. When that was first revealed. Like, the scene with him walking through the snow or whatever. So, yeah, Sony has a history of that. maybe we'll see more of that Microsoft title Kingdoms, which got renamed at Eat Rice, is it?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, that looks like a cool game.
Yeah, well, probably we can see more of that, because right now Microsoft has a really bare bones 2012.
There's a Halo game,
and that's about it, really.
Yeah, and there's Rise, and technically speaking, we've seen nothing of Halo except for the teaser.
Oh, we've got Minecraft, if that counts.
And Fable the Journey, the game that's supposedly not on rails.
The non-on-rails on rails game.
Yep. It's not on rails, he promised.
Sorry, Peter Molyneux, we believe you completely this time.
Yes, because, you know, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you. Fool me three times, it's just sad. Okay, this question. Why is there not a Twilight game for Kinect?
Because I don't think teenage girls are interested in Kinect.
I don't even know how you'd be able to make a video game about Twilight. I don't even know what it's about. Is it like vampires and werewolves falling in love?
It's like some sort of weird love story between some girl and some vampire and there was some werewolf clan. I don't think that makes a video game.
It's more of a love story than it is an actual action-esque movie. So
it plays more to like some sort of novel sort of picture book DS game than anything else. Because teenage girls all over their DSs, I think. I don't know. They're more likely to be over DSs than Kinect is, for sure.
Speaking of females, there's no way for this not to sound a bit sexist. I didn't realize that Zelda had such a huge female following. But yeah, at the launch event for Nintendo World, so it's always interesting to go to these launch events. I've never actually gone for any of like the dude bro games. I would actually want to check that out. But Zelda has Mario was mostly kids and families. Zelda has an interesting mix of, like, you know, you have, like, your older, you know, like, your male demographic, but there's a lot of females there as well.
Well, the Zelda games aren't too complex, and they're, are they? They're kind of just complex enough for it to be sort of someone's first video game if they're not, like, a super casual. So I'm not surprised at all.
Thinking about it when I was young, I've grown up, I knew a lot of girls who were into Zelda in high school and stuff like that. And I think part of, like you said, it's kind of one of those games that challenges you, but it's not one of those games that beats you up with a challenge. It's kind of, like Zelda is a game full of a lot of, oh yeah, moments. Like when it kicks, it finally kicks.
Yeah, and if something's not happening, then you're doing something wrong, and it's not obscure what you're doing wrong. It just takes just enough thinking.
Yeah, because it's one of those games, and I've had this happen with Skyward Sword, where you just start looking around, and you're like, crap, I'm stuck, and it's like, oh, there you go.
And it's like Portal.
Yeah, Portal's another game that's perfectly like that. It's like, once you see it, like, how did I think of this stuff?
Yeah.
Like, Portal 2 is like that, especially in co-op, where I would, like, once you solve the puzzles, you realize, like, this was so easy.
Yeah.
But you spent, like, 10 minutes trying to figure it out.
Zelda's one of those games that you would introduce non-gamers to it, and it gets them into games quite well because of the problem solving.
And it's
quite attractive to look at, and
it's
accessible, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, and one of the things a lot of reviewers pointed out, and is that a lot of people, to them, Zelda is kind of a love game. It is, at the end of the day, it's about a boy who meets a girl who does anything in his powers to save her and be with her, even though, for the most part, it tended to be a platonic relationship until Skyward Sword, where they make it more overt that Zelda has a thing for Link, and Link is, you know, the first three dungeons so far is about Link chasing down a girl. It's not about him saving the world from a great threat. It's about him trying to find the girl he's in love with. So there's that. Anything else you want to add before we call it a wrap?
No. Other than Minecraft is out, but probably everybody knows about that because it's Minecraft and I hope everyone's bought it already because you're paying $26 if you haven't bought it already.
And it's no longer in beta, right?
No longer in beta.
Nice. So yeah, I want to thank Adam, for joining us once again.
Oh, no problem.
Daniel, as always.
As always.
This has been New World in episode 52.
I'll feel the same.